A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The Telegraph. The Telegraph. Podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Brian Moore's Full Contact in association with The Telegraph and QBE Business Insurance. I'm Brian Moore and joining me in the studio, as you can see, is the former Lion and Scotland fly half, Craig Chalmers. Hello, Craig.
Evening, Brian.
Coming up on the podcast, we'll be going over the Lions' first game on tour with Tyrone Howe and Nick Evans. Nigel Owens is back, as always, to answer your rugby laws questions. Super League is on the agenda with the Huddersfield legend Earl Crabtree going over the latest action. Plus, we'll be hearing from another member of the team behind the team. Remember that you can join us every week live on Facebook at 6 p.m. Just search for Telegraph Sport, and you can listen to the whole show via the Telegraph website. Remember to subscribe to the podcast so you'll never miss an episode, and please leave a review. On with the show. Craig, in the first section, as you know, we like to feature some listeners' questions, if they're sensible, and we've got a few that are sensible this week. Let's see. One from Mace. Is the lack of preparation time for this tour, highlighted by yesterday's tired effort, a sign that Lions tours are being undermined again? Just in general, what about their... What about the preparation in terms of flying and all sorts of other stuff?
I think it's tough, Brian. You know, the season is so long these days. Back when we were in the Lions 2 in 89, we finished our club games in end of March, I think it was. So you had all, you know, 2 months to prepare. We were, you know, probably fitter than ever to go on this tour. We had, you know, some good time together in London, but not nearly as much as, you know, we would have had if the game had been professional. But no, listen, flying in 3 days before the first game is not the best idea, I don't think. And you could tell that certain players hadn't recovered properly from, you know, the jet lag. And
well,
you know,
jet lag's a really subjective thing, isn't it? Some people cope with it well, some people don't. And you can't actually predict how it will go. You just have to find out when they're... What really concerns me is, look, I understand how expensive the Lions is now, when you see the amount of players they take, and they, you know, all the facilities are top draw, and they've got a big team behind the team, as they need to. But not flying out because you have to stay for a sponsor's farewell dinner and then stopping the night in Melbourne because Qantas sponsor you, and delaying yourself therefore by at least 3 days probably. That to me is the wrong way. That to me shouldn't happen. You should be able to find some way around that for sponsors to give them what they need.
Oh, definitely. But it's ridiculous that player welfare is really, really important.
Yeah.
And on this occasion, player welfare hasn't really come into it. And there's so many staff there. There's so many people in the backroom staff that look at all the little bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And they'll have looked at it, the best way to do it.
Yeah.
And they've obviously not got it right this time. And it's got to be a... Got to be looked at for the next tour. Next tour is to South Africa, so it should be a bit easier.
What about the idea of flying the players out who met early and didn't have the, you know, the domestic commitments, flying them out first?
That'd probably make a lot of sense. Get them over to New Zealand.
Split the tour?
But, you know, It's just the lack of weekends that they have,
yeah.
And the season has got to be looked at. Next, you know, the Lions is really, really important, I think, to the British people, the British to British rugby, and I think it's also important to South Africa, New Zealand, and Australia, because it does create a lot of revenue for them as well. So
yeah.
They've got to just get the balance right. But you know, listen, the players are delighted to be there. They're there now. We've won our first game, and you know, let's hopefully the guys will recover for Wednesday.
Look, I don't know if you remember. I mean, you know, the tours we went on. That I can't. Well, the first game in 89, Perth was a fairly mediocre run out on it.
We were there a week, weren't we?
We were there a week. I understand that,
and that makes a difference.
Yeah, it does make a difference, and of course, there's a 4-hour time difference as well. No, 4 hours less flying to Perth than there is to to the East Coast.
Now that was we've into Perth first, and you know the first session. I always remember it. We went to that old just club ground.
Yeah,
and the guys were just running their legs, just a little bit running up and down. And then after that, it was in behind the sheds for a couple of beers and a barbie, I think.
Yeah.
And that was where the guys bonded. And we had that time to bond. We had that week
That's
to get
true.
Together.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a tough game. Although every player, I think Buck Shelford's brother was playing against us in that game.
Yeah.
I think there was 14 Kiwis in that team.
Yeah.
Australia team.
Well, it was funny because as you went around Australia, the same players kept turning up, didn't it? It was, you know, New South Wales country, then New South Wales and, you know, in Queensland country and whatever. Who was it? Which was a back row player? I think he played against us six times, didn't he? Who was a back row player?
That happened that tour. We had obviously the Queensland guys, like some Michael Lyon, they played against each other, against us five times.
Yeah,
because Michael played in the Anzac game as well. I think he did in that game.
Yes,
as
he
well.
Was one of the few. That...
So you know, there's you know a lot of these guys were playing. You know, against us a lot, and they were tough games. New South Wales, Queensland were tough games.
Yeah,
Australia B, obviously the strong team as well.
That's true, yeah.
And Melbourne and that really, really wet night. So yeah, I mean, it was a tough tour in certain regards, but it's you know I think this one here in New Zealand is going to be different level.
Huge, a different level. What I mean, obviously it's difficult for players to get off the plane 3 days, and yet some did cope with it. Cal Sinclair was a Ross Moriarty, Tommy Faletau.
Yep.
They all stood out. And then people like you know Johnny Sexton and Stuart Hogg, to a certain extent, you know, did not perform anywhere near like we know they can do.
I think Johnny Sexton's been struggling laterally at the end of the season for Leinster as well.
That's a fair point, yeah.
And, you know, he had a poor game. It wasn't just, you know, he just looked lethargic.
Yeah.
His kicking wasn't great. But his passing was off as well. His passing was poor. And that was, you know, the one or two passes went astray. Stuart Hogg's pass to Watson.
The 2-on-1, yeah.
The 2-on-1. You know, little things like that. There's little inaccuracies in their play that cost them a few tries. But that will come. It's gonna come in time. And when they start understanding each other and the angles of running and all that kind of stuff,
yeah.
It doesn't just happen straight away.
Yeah.
So I'm not getting too upset about the you know what happened on Saturday morning. I think players will take time to gel, but you've got to gel pretty quickly.
Well, the problem for players is this: is they've been promised that they'll get a chance to you know to go for a test shirt, but at most they're going to get two games. And if you've had one bad game, you're under a lot of pressure to, you know, in the next time. And the terrible dichotomy you're in as a player is you want to shine, but if you're greedy and you try and take things on yourself and you get found out, that won't go down well either. So you've got to tread a really difficult balance.
You've got to play well,
yeah.
But you've got to be a team man at the same time.
Yeah.
And it, you know that's where you know the halfbacks really do come into to their own. Like I said, Reece Webb, Laidlaw was a real team man.
Yeah.
On Saturday, yesterday morning, but there was times when he could have had a little nip himself and have a little break himself.
Yeah.
But that's not the kind of player he is.
Yeah.
If Reece Webb had been on from the start, then I reckon he'd made one or two cracking breaks because there was space in and around the ruck at times. But I think you know, like you know, Warburton was pretty much non-existent yesterday. Best.
Well, he has been out for a long time, hasn't he? It actually looked like what it was. He was, you know, he'd come back and his first run out after a long time.
And Henderson, you know, Toby Faletau overtook Henderson going back to make that tackle to save that try. And I was really impressed with Toby Faletau, and I think he's going to be a massive player on this tour, especially that Vinopolo now is now out the tour.
Well, the thing is, he's got to be.
And the good thing for the Lions is that he's not been over-rugbied. He's come back from an injury.
That's true.
Come back into the Bath team, played some decent games, scored a few tries, and I think he's pretty fresh. And that showed the way he ran back and tackled the Kiwi Barbarians boy, which I don't think Billy might not have been back there doing the defending.
Maybe not. But Sinclair, you know, it was a bit of a wild card. A lot of people expressed surprise at him being picked, and yet, you know, he could. I'm willing to bet he'll be at least on the bench for the test. At least.
I was really impressed with his skills, and people have talked about it. I've not seen that much of him.
No.
He's never started a test for England.
No.
As yet, but he started for the Lions. So, you know, the kid's full of confidence. He seems to be really popular amongst the guys as well. It could be a sort of Tom Smith slash Paul Wallace kind of person who people didn't expect to play in that test series in 97. But they came in and they made a big impression off the field and on it, which is really important, obviously.
I tell you what, if you had Vinopolo, I mean, I think Marler is, he's not nailed on, but Marler is a hard player. And I think Gatland might well look at him to start a game, you know, when the rough stuff's around. But Vinopolo and Sinclair as handling props are top draw, actually.
I thought Mako came on yesterday and did really well when he came on. You know, he stripped that ball away at the end as well, which sort of, you know, got the Lions, the penalty, and got them clear and won the game. So, but no, the guys that came off the bench showed a lot of energy and made a difference. I think Farrell, you know, people are talking about the axis, you know, Sexton and Conor Murray. Yeah. I really think that, you know, Farrell has been outstanding for Saracens this year in the 10 shirt. And I do feel that Gatland, after speaking to him a couple of times, that he is really, you know, looking at him there.
Yeah. Another question from Simon Allison. Quick question, Brian. Did you play in Oz and New Zealand test players in the provincial games, or were those players saved for the test? No, they weren't. They all played and played several times. I can understand why the Kiwis want to hold them back, but I actually think it works both ways, you know, because the players who do play against them get the experience of actually playing, you know, at ground level. And you can look at videos all you like, and it's not the same, is it?
No, I think that they look back at the last Lions tour in Australia, and they didn't play any of the test players in provincial games. And I think they were undercooked, the Aussies, for the test series.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the All Blacks will have looked at that as well. You know, they had a look at what happened 4 years ago. But I think they'll play. I think the Sonny Bill Williams, they'll play this weekend. I think they'll play test. All the Auckland Blues players that are got potential of playing in the test series will play this weekend. Or, sorry, during the week.
I
think also the Crusaders as well at the weekend.
I tell you what, I mean, the thing is, as I say, you can look at Super Rugby and you get a certain impression about what it is or isn't like. At ground level, they're going to find out, I'm pretty sure. I'll ask Nick Evans about this later on. But that style of rugby is very quick. Oh. I don't think they may not appreciate. I mean, the stuff that the provincial Barbarians played, I think that was one of the things that surprised them. The Barbarians, one of the things about New Zealand play in general is once they get past the gain line, the ability to get quick ball is absolutely second to none.
From 1 to 15, they were all comfortable on the ball as well. Every player in that team was comfortable. And I was really impressed with Bryn Gatland as well. We've got to mention him.
Yeah, true.
You know, I thought he had a great game.
Yes,
you know, he's not the most, you know, a flashy player, but he did all the basics really, really well. He brought players into the game at the right time. He kicked at the right time. He kicked very, very well. And I was really impressed with him. And, you know, he's got a big future ahead of him. But no, I think they're all comfortable on the ball. And as you mentioned before, we were chatting before, and, you know, they're not really that keen to have big battles up front in the scrums. They want to get the ball into the midfield, you know, play fast, play quick, and ask questions of defences. Yeah. And that's what they're so good at. If you watched the game last week or 2 weeks ago, Crusaders against Wellington, Hurricanes, that was a proper rugby game. You know, you do get some Super Rugby that's a bit, you know, all over the shop, but that was a proper rugby game. And anybody watching that will see how much quality, and that'll be more like what the Lions are going to get in the test matches.
Yeah, and I brought this up before, and I'm I do believe that the All Black management, who have a really good relationship with the Super Rugby coaches, to the extent to which they do cooperate, you know, in terms of developments that the All Black management say they want to incorporate in New Zealand rugby, they will go away, and even though it's not necessarily in their team's best interest because they've got certain players with them, they will work on that and they'll suborn that to the national thing. I'm absolutely certain, without having any proof whatsoever, if that is not an incongruous, that they will have said to them, look, we want you to test the lines in this way, in this game.
Yeah.
Because we want to see how they do this.
The good thing for me in that game, the Hurricanes against the Crusaders, was that Bowden Barrett looked quite average in that game. Which is a real bonus, because he looks so good most of the time.
Yeah.
And he can be put under pressure, and any player can be put under pressure, yeah, you know, if the team plan correctly, you know, for them. And, you know, listen, if we drop a game or two...
I think it's almost certain they will drop one.
We will, yeah. I think we will. Yeah,
you know,
I hope they don't.
Of course, we don't.
I think it's really important. You know, we had the midweek team in the Lions in '89,
yeah,
and we had Donald Lennon who led his donuts, yeah, and which were Donald's donuts midweek, which, yeah, that team was outstanding all the way through the tour, and I think that was a massive factor in the Test Series victory because everyone was standing together on and off the field.
Well, if you say that, you know, if you talk to the guys about the '97 win, 2013. The midweek side,
yeah,
again, was a very strong, you know, strong character-wise. And everyone says, and because it's true, it does contribute hugely to the success or the failure.
I think
of
at the moment as well, the guys don't know what that's going to be. I think there's three or four games that the guys have got a chance to perform in. And once those three or four games are done, then they'll have a better idea, yeah, where they're going to be. And that's when you find out if there's a little split or not.
Yeah. Do you remember, I mean, this was, I don't know, let be interesting to see if it was like this for you. I remember thinking, certainly in 93 when, you know, in 89 I was second favourite, you know, miles outside to get a test place. No one thought I was going to get a test place before the tour. In 93 it was a different matter, it was much more even, me and Kenny Milne. But I remember thinking, right, let's have a look. If he plays on the Saturday, or if he plays there, he's definitely going to be in the test side. So if I'm playing in a unit with him and him, or them on them, they're going to be in the test team. And that means that... And trying to work it out that way, it was a really convoluted... Because the management try to keep you on the toes, don't they? So you're not sure yourself.
Yeah, well, they do. I mean, for me in 89, I was 20 years old. I was a baby, yeah, of the trip. Yeah. And Paul Dean started the first
That's
game
right.
down in Western Australia. But he went to Australia with a niggly hammy injury, I think it was, and he came off after about 2 minutes or 20 minutes in the first game, and I came on and I played most of the games up to the first test,
yeah,
and then the forwards played really badly the first test.
Yeah. Well, played really badly and you got dropped, which is not really fair.
I'm only joking.
No, but I tell you what that did show, though, didn't it? It shows this, that as a halfback, if the forwards get stuffed, there's nothing you can do. Or very little you can do.
No, listen, the forwards are the scrum halves and the fly halves best mates. I'm telling you that for sure. Because if you don't perform, then it makes it very, very hard for us to perform. That's my excuse anyway.
So, is it possible to... it's not possible to even predict a test team at the moment. You do really have to see... At least one run out for everybody, don't you?
You do. I mean, I've got a back line in my head, but I think Gatland will go with Farrell, and that's his big decision he's got to make.
Where's he gonna be though? Is he gonna be a 10 or a 12?
Well, I think he'll go from at 10. I think he's got the likes of Henshaw at 12. If Henshaw plays well at 12 in the next game,
what do you think of Teo?
I like Teo. We don't mention him actually. We should have mentioned him.
Yeah.
I think he showed some good stuff. Simple yesterday. He's very physical. He's very
well. His
direct.
Game is simple. But this is the point about Teo. You know, he plays for Worcester, with the greatest respect to Worcester fans. You know, Worcester are not an outstanding team. You know, they're a decent team, Premiership team. But as he steps up, he just keeps doing the same job.
Yeah.
in higher quality teams.
Yeah, but to be fair to Worcester, and if you, I've watched Worcester a little bit because it's one of my old teams, and one of my mates, Carl Hall, coaches there. Yeah. And the back play is actually really good.
Yeah.
They've got some really good back play. They've got good backs coach there. Yeah. Sam Vesti.
Yes, obviously. Yeah.
Sam Vesti's going with England to
Argentina. He's going to Argentina, skills coach.
He's going there for a reason, you know. Yeah. So, he's in the back line to actually try to play rugby.
That inside shoulder run, you know, when he keeps them straight so there's the space outside, it's invaluable, actually, isn't it?
No, it is, and you know, he's going to straighten the line and create space inside and outside. But you've got to have runners, and that's the one thing. The only way that the Lions are going to beat the All Blacks is if they do what Ireland did. They take the game to them.
Yeah.
And the only times that we've got near the All Blacks as a team, a Scotland team, was when we actually ran at them and asked them questions.
Yeah.
They make them think like any other team. You know, make them think, make them move them around a little bit and create
chip
space.
Away.
And
yeah.
we can certainly do that, I think.
Yeah.
In association with QBE Business Insurance. Principal partner of the British and Irish Lions.
A lot of Irish players touted early on for test places. Rory Best.
Rory was quiet,
nothing outstanding.
Yeah, I just don't know. I think, Jamie George, who I think is a good player, but will he be a bench player? He's done so well for England off the bench. Owens has got a little injury.
Yeah.
I suppose Rory Best had a bad tour four years ago. So
yeah.
I think he'll be desperate to, you know, to, and he's had the, you know, he's captained Ireland against the winning, against the All Blacks.
Yes.
So, you know, that experience is vital.
It is valuable. And Conor Murray.
I haven't
seen him yet, Conor Murray was one of the players that, if I'd had to put any money on someone starting. And there weren't many that I would put anything on because I know how difficult it is to, you know, to predict that. He probably would have been one of them.
I think he is. Yeah, he probably played his best game for Ireland in that game in Chicago that day. He was outstanding that day for Ireland. I think Tad Furlong as well. I think he's you know, even coming off the bench the other day, carries well. Yeah. He scrums well. I think he's an all round rugby player. I think those two guys for me will start the test match for sure.
The back row. It's going to be interesting, isn't it? I've always I notice him more because he's got a blue scrum cap, and that's quite noticeable. But Justin Tipperick, I think he's a really clever footballer.
No, he is. He's very clever. He gets in the right positions.
Yes,
and he does things. You little soft, you know, subtle hands at times to put a winger away or a centre away. He could have been a centre probably. If he'd wanted to be, but you know, I think he showed up well yesterday when he came on. He showed a lot of energy. Line speed was far better when he got on the pitch. You know, I think that was just because of certain circumstances with obviously Sam. And you know, I've just got to wonder whether it is the right thing to have Sam as Warburton as a captain. He played probably better for Wales this year, not having that captaincy to deal with. So, you know, he's just coming back from his injury. He's got the captaincy. He's got a lot of responsibility. You know, he's at the forefront. Every time you see the Lions on TV, he's always at the forefront.
Because although they've said it won't be a problem and he wouldn't take it personally, and I believe them, that he'd be hugely disappointed, but he put that behind him because that's the sort of player he is.
Yeah.
It's not ideal not to have the captain. You know, it doesn't signal well.
No.
You know, I remember Finlay saying in 89... you know, there's going to be changes and it might well include me. And everyone's thinking, it's not going to include you, is it, for God's sake? Now we can speak to Tyrone Howe, the Irishman who played in the 2001 tour to Australia. Tyrone, good evening.
Hi, Brian. How
Hello.
Are you doing?
Hello, that's all.
How are you doing, mate?
The opening game, we were just saying, we don't do it too much store by it because of various circumstances. But the old adage, you can't play yourself into the test team, but you can play yourself out, might have occurred. What was your thought with an Irish angle?
Well, I just think you're probably thinking more about Sexton than anybody else when you talk about the Irish angle. I mean, I thought it was just an incredibly frustrating game for him. He was in the wrong end of possession and territory.
Yep.
No quick ball. I think a fairly laboured pass from Laidlaw. He was just desperately, desperately trying to.
Even trying too hard. No, Tyrone. No, we were having.
I know exactly what it means, though, because I mean, you're playing games, and we've all been there over the years, and you know, you get a ball from the scrum half that's a bit slow, but you've got poor ball coming back from the forwards, and then you get quicker ball in the last half an hour when you get dragged off.
Yeah,
so that's really frustrating. Yeah. And so, I mean, Farrell came on and they got a bit quicker ball at the end. And
I tell you what, on fly half is one of these positions. I mean, I know it sounds silly, but I did play a fly half for several years at school. But it's one of these positions where if you try too hard and try to do things on your own, it just doesn't work, does it? You've got to play what's there.
You can't force things. And I think at times yesterday, the boys tried to force things. Yeah. Not just Sexton, I think every player, you know, Hogg at times. Every player was probably guilty at some point during the match. I mean, you saw one or two guys get ball ripped out of their hands. Moriarty, who played well. A great ball carrier. And I think you'll make a big impression in New Zealand. I like the way he plays. Mm-hmm. But no, I think that you just try to force things, you know, fly halves, you just got to let it happen. And obviously, kick at the right times, kick in the front foot, kick at the right, and kick in the right areas. But you've got to have somebody chasing it as well. That's what happened when Farrell came on. He kicked in the corner, he hit the grass, and then they ran it back. And it looked good because, they got the ball back and they scored a try from that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the especially, when you're putting box kicks up and stuff like that, which Lelor, does well, you've got to have that organised chase. Otherwise, you turn good kicks into ineffectual ones.
Yeah, I like Lelor. I think he's a cracking player. He's got a really good head in him. He understands the game really, really well. But his kicking for me yesterday wasn't high enough, mm-hmm. and the wingers could have chased it slightly better, I thought, at times. I think Conor Murray came on, his kicks were actually a bit higher and a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And you need that hang time for the guys to get. And come the test series especially, the back three defensively are going to be under all kinds of pressure from their kicking.
Yes.
From kicks across the pitch from Barrett, up in there from Barrett.
Yeah.
And that's one area that we're going to have to be really on it.
Well, I think we can. Unfortunately, we've lost to Tyrone Howe, and I'm sorry about that. Just technical difficulty of overcomers, I'm afraid. But we can speak to a substitute, and he's a fairly decently qualified one, someone we know very well on this show, Nick Evans. Nick, are you there?
Evening, boys.
Hi. I read it in one Kiwi paper that the Lions disgraced the shirt. It's a bit much.
That's, I think that's a bit much. You've got to give them a little bit of dues there. 3 days coming off a plane, but no, it was it was a little bit underwhelming from what I was expecting. And
for me,
everyone started talking about this jet lag, but I would have probably seen that in the last 20 minutes. But the errors and the inaccuracy in the first 10, 15 minutes just shows they were a little bit off the pace, and I can go with that a little bit. But look, they will get better, but unfortunately for Lions fans, so will the quality of the opposition as well.
Yeah, that was going to be my second question. How, if it's possible to put a percentage on it, how much better will the Super Rugby sides be than the players? Not necessarily the Barbarians as a team, but the players in general that play at that level.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Barbarians were, a group that were put together on the Sunday. And to put it into context, the guy who was captaining it was an amateur guy that's never played Division One rugby before. And he was captaining the side in the last 10, 15 minutes. So it goes to show that, really good group of young guys coming through right on the fringe of Super Rugby, but, not good enough to get the contracts now. Starting on Wednesday against the Blues, you're up against the full medal jacket of Super Rugby, All Blacks included as well. So the level's going to go up a lot. Most of the listeners and most of us watch the Super Rugby. We see the quality that you see. The quality of the New Zealand teams compared to the Australian teams and the South African teams is a lot higher.
Yeah.
The intensity is a lot higher. They're not test match levels of intensity, but they're pretty damn close to it, some of those New Zealand battles. So, look, it's going to be a big step up. But the Lions are prepared for that; they know that, and I'm sure this week they'll be training for that as well.
Hi, Nick. It's Craig Chalmers here. How are you?
Good, mate. Not too bad.
Good. Do you think the provincial teams, you know, the Blues, Crusaders, will they play their potential international players against the Lions in the lead up to the Test series, or do you think they'll hold them back?
No, they'll play them. It was put out pretty early on that from New Zealand, from the NZRU, that coming up to the first Test, the games leading up probably to the Maori's game,
right.
those franchise teams will be having the All Blacks involved. So. What is it, the Blues, Chiefs, Crusaders, I think, are the
so
three
all four,
before the Maori.
Because I was told there were two. There'd be two.
Was
but I don't
yeah,
know. I didn't know it was all four. But
yeah, I'm pretty sure that the first two will have the ones in. I mean, to be honest, it'll all come down to injuries as well.
Yeah.
You know, Crotty's picked up an injury, for the Crusaders in the weekend. I think everyone else kind of got through okay. There's a couple of kind of concussion worries, the likes of Ben Smith. Barrett got through his game, which was good. So, look, I mean, I'm sure if the NZRU are at all worried about a certain position, I'm sure you won't see, an All Black coming in there playing. But from what I hear, they'll be going in, as strong as possible.
Well, first up, I mean, possibly the weakest of the teams. That's not to say it's weak. Certainly in relation to the rest of the competition, but the Blues. What should the Lions be looking out for? Is there a ubiquity about the way the New Zealand provincial sides will play against them, or is there the distinct factors for each of them?
There's probably little nuances, factors, within each one. Look, what you get with the New Zealand teams. I heard, just as I came on to you guys the last little bit there of, I think you were mentioning Laidlaw's kicking.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you cannot kick poorly to New Zealand teams, whether it's the All Blacks or the franchise teams at all. That is what they look for, and they're well placed to be patient in a kicking battle. New Zealand teams kick a lot more than you think. They do kick, and they are very, very patient, and they wait for that poor kick. And when that poor kick comes in, that's when they go. And then that's when they turn into that unstructured football, which they are best in the world at. And the franchises are no different. The Blues have a very good back line. I guess they're probably a point for the Lions to have a crack at, which I think they'll do the whole tour as their type five. There may be a little bit of a question about that. The defensive mauling of the Blues is probably not the greatest. But then again, I don't know whether, Brian, you're probably better at me for answering this. Were they holding a bit back set piece? Because, I thought the provincial side actually performed reasonably well.
But this is my theory. Because New Zealand forwards do not see the scrum as a penalty contest, and they actually have the novel idea that you can restart the game properly and maybe score 7 points rather than three. No one sees these prolonged battles where one side just shoves the other side around. And because they don't see that, people think, oh, well, they can't scrum particularly well. They can. It's just that they see the scrum and the line out in different ways. They're not weak. It's just that they use it differently. So I think anyone who thinks they're going to put a New Zealand team away by beating them sufficiently well up front is living in dreamland, because Kiwi sides will always find a way to get enough ball to play with. They don't have to dominate, they'll get enough ball. So I don't think they were holding them back, and I think that's a bit of a lesson for them.
Yeah, and actually something out of the provincial game I noticed too is with those guys coming through was the ruck area. Especially up here, you see a lot of guys just flying in, trying to slow that ball down. Even the provincial side, if it wasn't on, they were out straight up on their feet, ready to go into the defensive line. And it was just that one or two specialist sevens, which I'm a big fan of, when they got their chance with their little cheat lines, they were really, really in there as well. So that's an area around the ruck and little inside balls, early in that second half, I think Sexton a couple of times turning the ball back and flying, they created a few yards on that inside there.
Nick. This is from a British guy to Kiwi. What is the best way to beat this New Zealand side at the moment? What if you were the coach of the Lions, how would you go about beating the All Blacks?
Yeah, look, I think first and foremost, you've got to take them out of their comfort zone. New Zealanders, if they are easily put into their comfort zone within a match, where they're dominating the ruck speed, dominating the game line defensively, and they have the ball in their hands, if you can keep the ball away from them. You know, I think Ireland did that very well. They kept the ball away from for long periods of the time, and they had a crack at them all the time. You know, they weren't afraid from playing from deep, but also mixing it up and putting the ball in behind the wingers and only giving them one option where they could kick it out, not giving them a chance to make two passes, run to the other side, make a few yards, and then they're into that into their attack shape. So, look, I'm a big fan from opposition teams having a crack, throwing something different than early on, but also playing to their strengths. Don't try and reinvent the wheel and try and do something crazy out of the ordinary to, you know, a bit like the Italian side. Look, you can't just keep doing it, trying to do that. You know, play to your strengths. You've got a very good forward pack. Have a crack at them. Have a go at them, but also take them out of their comfort zone. Don't give them
I totally agree with you. I think that's the only way to beat the All Blacks is to actually have a go at them. And the nearest I ever got to beating the All Blacks was in Auckland in 1990. And we decided to have a go at the All Blacks in the first test and the second test, and we got pretty close in the second test, a game we probably should have won, but we didn't.
Well, I mean, I have the distinction actually. We lost 3 and 1-2 against the All Blacks, it's the same. Look, Nicky, I don't know. Comment on this. You won't beat the All Blacks up front sufficiently to dominate the game and, you know, screw them off the park. But no. The way you use that is like everything else. If you can put a little bit of pressure on the front five, so the ball isn't quite as good from the line out, you know, the scrum half has a bit more trouble, then the backs aren't going forward as quickly, then you can get, you know, so the tackles are made there, just their side of the gain line, instead of right on or your side, then they're under pressure like everyone else, and then you can start scrapping, and you've got to keep at them, and then just like any other side that is denied front foot ball, it just becomes significantly more difficult.
Yeah, the breakdown area, Nick mentioned it before, the breakdown area is key, and if we can slow the All Blacks ball down and give them slow ball, you know, they will revert to kicking and get Bowden Barrett or whoever's playing at 10 or in midfield making poor decisions. You make one or two wrong decisions, and then it's making the most of those poor decisions that they make in the game. Because in test matches, as you know, as you both know, that it's about the opportunities that come along. You've got to be clinical. You must take your chances, and I think that the Lions.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, but I do think we've got to make the All Blacks think. We've got to keep them guessing what we're going to do in the Test match. But they've got to do this in the provincial games leading up to the Test matches as well. They've got to try the combinations, and they've got to ask questions of these provincial teams and make them think.
The All Blacks will create, you know, 5, 6, 7 opportunities. They'll probably take 4, 5, 6 of them. The Lions are going to have to create opportunities, but do they have the quality to finish them? Look, you know, they might only create 3 or 4. They've got to nail them. They can't have, you know, little slip-ups, and that's going to be the pressure that they're going to be under. I've got no illusion, as you say, you know, that it's going to be intense. But defensively, I think both teams will be fine, but there will be times, there will be opportunities that they will create. Do they have the quality to nail those opportunities when they come along? Because that's what you're going to have to do.
How many All Blacks are seriously under threat of not making it through injury? Because Kieran Reid looks as though he's going to make it. Not so sure about Coles.
Kino injures Kino?
Yeah, I think Kino's got his knee injury. I think he might be a bit of a race against time for the first test. Reid, obviously, the soundbite's coming out that he's going to be there. He'll be a little bit undercooked for the first test. Coles is probably the big worry for me. I'm not hearing a lot. You know, he was back training and then he wasn't. He was going to be on the bench and then he wasn't. So look, I don't know where he is at the moment. Ben Smith's got a few recurring things with his head. Things like that. So, and obviously Bowden Barrett, you know, he had one, but he obviously got through the weekend. So that was good as well. Crossy is a new one that's just come up. Israel Daggs obviously just come back now. So from a New Zealand point of view, it's good to see some of these guys coming back, which is good. Obviously, that most of those opposites have got one more game now until the test starts. So, fingers crossed from our point of view.
Is there going to be any new faces in the All Blacks team this test series? Any guys we've not heard of maybe before?
Yeah, it'll be interesting, really. My big thing will be probably how the bench is going to be made up. I think fullback's going to be an interesting selection issue for me. I think McKenzie has just been absolutely fantastic for the Chiefs.
Ben Smith has
worked his way back. He hasn't been quite the Ben Smith we've been used to seeing. I thought he was a lot better against the Crusaders in the weekend. You know, shows some really, really good touches, but not to his back, the way he was, you know, when he was playing absolutely fantastic. So, and then you've got Jordy Barrett, who can kick goals. So out of those those three, McKenzie and Geordie Barrett, can kick goals. So, you know, Bowden Barrett's not been kicking a lot of goals. He kind of does a little bit things, you know, here and there. So 15 is going to be interesting, and probably the makeup of the bench of that as well.
Because that's one area that I think the Lions have got a superiority is the goal-kicking stakes.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
I think Owen Farrell will play somewhere in the test team. I'm not sure your thoughts on that, but I'm thinking he's going to be edging towards a 10 slot rather than the 12 slot for this test series. But I think it's a massive advantage for the Lions to have a couple of quality goal kickers in the ranks.
Yeah, I was really surprised at Sexton, you know, the way he played. It wasn't the Sexton that I'm used to seeing up here. And I think, you know, he didn't play well. I didn't see the game. He didn't play well for his last game for Leinster as well. So I'd say from a British Lions point of view, you know, his form is a little bit of a concern, because I would have had Sexton, Farrell, as a 10-12. But, you know, watching what Farrell did when he came on and, you know, just orchestrated, you know, field position, made a couple of really good quality passes. You know, I've never seen Sexton throw many balls on the ground.
No.
He was just really off sorts. So, yeah, at the moment, you know, after the weekend, I think Farrell's probably got that 10, 10 spot, you know, sewn up.
Nick, just a last question. Which of the four provincial teams is going to be the hardest one, do you reckon?
You'd, on paper, you'd probably say the Crusaders, the fact that they're 14-0 at the moment and seem to find a knack of beating anyone. You know, well coached at the moment, have got a good team. Injuries haven't affected them as much as probably some of the other teams. But I think probably the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs will be really rearing to go for this. You saw what they did against. I know it was a very understrength kind of Wales side, but. These boys, when they get together, they're a bit like the Maoris, the Maori side. You know, they've got a lot of pride, a lot of passion in that region of the world. And, you know, down there at Waikato Stadium, you know, the cowbells will be going. It'll be loud. It'll be really, really, it'll be really, really brace up in there. And those bloody things, I tell you, Jesus, they get to your head. But, I think they'll be really rearing to go. And so I think for me, that'll be a really, really tough game.
Nick, thanks very much. Great as always.
Cheers, Nick.
Not a problem.
Speak to you later. Bye. Well, I think now we... Have we got Tyrone? We have got Tyrone back, which will
you
be great. Hi, much better. We're landline, even better. Let's take up where we were. We're talking about Johnny Sexton. Carry on.
Yeah, well, I just thought it was a difficult afternoon for him.
Yeah.
As you just heard, you know, for form recently, it's been tricky as well. And he just desperately tried to make things happen again, you know, on a platform that wasn't really going for him.
Yeah.
But I certainly think that Farrell came on and looked commanding. Now, you put all the other little bits of structure in place and they were there for him. But at the same time, he came on and added composure and real leadership there. So I don't think Johnny's played himself out of that shirt. But I think it's huge opportunities now for whoever else comes into the shirt and the other positions, you know, in the next match or two.
I mean, Craig and I were one of the things is you don't know what they're going to do with the 12. I mean, you know, Teo, we reckon had a reasonable game, and Henshaw obviously he's a huge power there. Yeah. Playing Farrell there. Give Sexton more chance, but you know, what's your feeling about what they might do with the centres?
Well, Gatland likes his big 12s, which is why one of the reasons, you know, Teo's come in there and Henshaw's in there. I think also it slightly depends how you want to play the game.
Mm.
Because, you know, if you've got your big abrasive 12 in there, you're smashing them up, you're getting the hitting lines, you're trying to get them over the gain line and popping those offloads, whereas Farrell is much more that sort of... the second 5/8 in Southern Hemisphere terms, and a much more of a distributor in that 12 channel. So I think it slightly might depend on what the game plan is. The problem is actually getting a cohesive, coherent game plan where everybody's singing off the same hymn sheet, because that's one of the big issues that they've got to address in a very short space of time.
I think the blend in the midfield is going to be really important, and that's who they go with at 13 as well. And looking at, I don't know if you watched much of the Pro 12 recently, but I thought Jordan Davis has been in great form for the Scarlets, and they're charged towards the Pro 12 title. And I think he's coming on to a real game now, and I think he is the front runner for me at the moment. And I think you might see Henshaw and him play in the next game. On, I'm not sure when the team's picked, but I'd like to see those two play together, definitely.
I think certainly Gatland, you know, he clearly will not maybe revert to, but he knows these Welsh players inside out. And if somebody's coming into form, been there, done that, that's a more straightforward selection to make.
Yeah.
You saw Jonathan Joseph had a very quiet game, and on the front foot is so dynamic, and you know he's a proven finisher. But first of all, you got to look at defence. And the defensive, there were a few leaks there, a few mistakes, and they've got to get that defensive line working as well. And Jonathan Davies in 13 is just, he's been around for so long, and you know, you saw with, let's say, O'Driscoll in the last couple of years, just having that, just the sort of intellectual property in that 13 shirt, particularly against, you know, attacks which are going to cause all sorts of problems. You know, there's definite value there. And Henshaw, well, you know, the marker's been laid down to him by Teo. Henshaw's got to go out now and produce something. So I think that, you know, as you say, it's a very interesting combination to play. But at the moment, probably you're looking at, I mean, it's so early days, mind you, but you're probably looking at a Farrell, Henshaw, or Teo, Davies, you know, 10, 12, 13.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's tough. And you probably see Dan Biggar play on, I think if he's fit, Dan Biggar should play on Wednesday. And that'll be Biggar, Henshaw, and probably Jonathan Davies that are playing in that midfield. And, you know, Dan Biggar's probably outside, a real outside chance. But if he has a good game, he puts his name in the hat. And that's what it's all about. Lions Tours is about impressing, you know, giving yourself a chance to be in that test side, because that's what everyone wants to be at the end of the day.
Yeah, I just think they've got such a short period of time together.
Yeah.
My gut feeling is that slowly but surely they will revert back to Saracens providing the core of that team. And
that's an interesting call. Why do you say that?
Well, I just think that, you know, they are the form side in the Northern Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, you even saw the impact of the bench. And I just think they've got a couple of just leaders in there who are used to playing. Now they've been on a roll. You take the extra game out of it, but when it matters, they have stepped up, and they seem to just have that ability to raise their game to another level. And there is also that understanding between them. And I just think that you're going to see. I personally think that quite a few of the Saracens players will come to the fore, and almost it's unthinkable to see a test team sheet without them on it.
What at the end of the day, have you heard? Presumably, you've read, like we all have, the. It wasn't a direct criticism, but the difference of opinion between Eddie Jones possibly and you know, as to how you go around beating the All Blacks, that you don't necessarily play you know, a direct game. What's your thoughts on that?
I think, given the lack of time they've got together, set piece is absolutely massive, and they've got to really try and take them on up front. And so getting me so very, you know, they didn't certainly get the upper hand in the scrums particularly, and the line-outs were decent enough, Cruz coming in and nicking one as well. I just think their set piece has got to be just that non-negotiable, the foundations. But, and I think they've got, I mean, I'm just not convinced that the skill set in the Northern Hemisphere matches the Southern Hemisphere. If it comes down to skills, then we will come short. But I think in terms of a direct, aggressive, abrasive game, and maybe, you know, having the kickers that you've spoken about, being able to convert those 3 points, it doesn't matter whether they're 1 point wins. I don't think we're going to be winning test matches 40 points to 20. I think it's going to be much tighter, and they're going to be coming down to drop goals and penalties and just fine decisions by referees. I mean, I don't know what you thought, Brian, about the referee, but I mean, there were some baffling decisions that only a Southern Hemisphere referee would make.
You better get used to those.
Well, I was going to say, it's a big difference who referees. We got two French referees in the second and third test, which will also be interesting. You know, you got South African in the first test. So, I mean, there are all these different sort of factors in the mix. What I would say is that Graham Henry has said is this schedule is suicidal. And what is for me most concerning is that you've already got Gatland really drawing attention to the schedule, and whoever arranged a game 3 days after stepping off a plane, you do have to question how much rugby they've played, and they probably played a heck of a lot, but it's absolutely insane.
Well, we will soon see. Thanks very much for your persistence, Tyrone.
Cheers, Brian.
I'll buy you a drink when we next meet in intervals.
Good man.
Cheers.
Look forward to it. Cheers, bye.
Cheers, Tim.
Bye-bye.
Q.
QBE Business Insurance, principal partner of the British and Irish Lions.
Time now to speak to someone who's heading off to Argentina to officiate fairly shortly. Nigel Owens, when are you going?
Flying tomorrow night, Brian.
Uh-huh, jolly good. BA? Because you might not get
yes,
there.
I am BA.
Oh, you want to ring up first, mate?
I hope I'll be fine. Cross fingers.
Yeah. I tell you what, with the, very simple. I just want you to alert everyone to the law variations that are going to be faced by the Lions.
There's not that much changes,
not
to
many.
Be honest with
there
you.
Are when, a few, though, aren't there?
There are a few, yeah, but when somebody's just sort of sitting and looking at the game, probably won't even notice them because there are only a couple of sort of little changes. For example, if the referee gives a penalty and the clock has now gone to 80 minutes, in the past you could opt for a scrum, or you could tap and go, or you could kick for the post. You didn't have the option of kicking the touch and taking the line out. This year, now, that has changed. So if the referee will give a penalty, time is up, the team can still have an option of kicking to the line out and taking the line out as if they were taking a scrum in the past. You also then have a change in the uncontested scrum rule. For example, if a team goes to uncontested scrum for whatever reason, they must have eight in the scrum all the time. So, for example, that means you may have to put one of your backs into the back row or the second row or whatever. So if you've gone all through the procedure...
You'd never get a back in the second row, Nigel. I'm sorry. You just wouldn't get him in the front five.
I tell you one thing, some of them could actually go in there.
But George North could, yeah.
George North and Jamie Roberts and stuff wouldn't have got a place in the second row, that's for sure.
Tim Visser.
So you'd have to have eight in the scrum at all times. So that will then sort of free up a bit more of the sort of space around the field. It'll also then prevent the team for sort of going to uncontested scrums easily just to defend the game or see the game out or something. So that's the idea of that. So that's the other change. And then the other change is just little things of penalty try. It'll be an automatic 7 points. You won't have to take the conversion. And then the other little things are the doing the touch when the ball is in touch. So if you think, for example, if the player had 1 foot in touch and 1 foot in the field of play and catches the ball, it was deemed last year that it would be his line out because he was ready in touch. This year it'll deem to be that it'll be the opposition line out that he's taken it into touch if the ball is still in the field of play. And as well, let's say the ball last year, if the ball was rolling towards you, and you had a foot in touch and picked the ball up, it would be your line out because the ball was still moving. If the ball became stationary and you picked it up, it would be the opposition line up. But this year, that has changed. And the same goes for the 22, the dead ball area and the try line. So, for example, if the ball is rolling towards the try line and the ball is still moving and you've got 1 foot over the try line and you pick the ball up before it reaches the try line and put it down, last year that would have been a drop of 22. This year it'll be scrum 5. It'll be deemed that you have taken it back. So the rolling ball makes no difference this year. So those really are
What about the in-goal area?
Same thing. If you have an in-goal area and the ball is rolling and you pick it up, then you will have deemed to have taken it dead, which means you won't have the option of the scrum back. It'll be a drop of 22 this year, whereas last year you would have the option of the scrum back.
Okay, so you're not
going to see really. So, you know, somebody is looking at the game with a naked eye is not really going to notice. There'll be no difference losing the structure of the way the game is played. It's just those one, a couple of little things which have been changed to try and bring everything into line and bring the consistency of sort of decision making into it, really.
Do you know the choice of the two French and I think one South African? Do you know how those are put together by World Rugby?
Yeah, quite simply, Brian. To be honest with you, you first of all have to take out the British referees. So no Irish, Scottish, English, or Welsh. They are out of the equation anyway because it's down to all neutrality because that's part of the participation agreement this year in New Zealand, and I think it was the same in Australia in 2013, because in 2009 there's only three Northern Hemisphere referees ever refereed Lions games, and they weren't the tests,
they were the midweek provincial games. And that was myself, Alan Roland, and Wayne Barnes. In 2009, we refereed a game each in the midweek games. And in the past, you'd have a South African referee, or, for example, when the Lions went to New Zealand in 2005, the games were refereed by some New Zealand referees in provincial games. Yeah. That is gone now. It is all part of the participation agreement that they are neutral referees. Well, not from the countries or the teams that are playing. And then basically take them out of the equation. They've chosen Alan Roland and his team of selectors would have selected, in their view, the top three referees available to referee the three Lions game, and then this is where you've landed up with two French and a South African. They've picked the best for the best.
I know it's not gonna happen, but I would be one of the players who would say that you could be trusted to not be influenced. Would you like to ref a Lions game?
Yeah, it'd be a great honour. I know, and if I had to. And even as a proud Welshman, if I had to referee Wales England, I would referee the both teams exactly the same. And that's the nature of you as a referee. But when I'm sitting at home watching Wales England, then I'm supporting Wales, of course. But if I had to referee it, it would make no difference. You would just referee it as you would referee the two teams. You'd be reffing red and white, basically. And that's probably the biggest compliment I've ever had off a few people. And a lot of them would be English people as well, when they've said, we trust you to referee a Wales England game. And that is probably the biggest compliment that one could get as a referee, I guess.
Who are your court officials going over with you to do the England-Argentina test series?
John Lacey will be my assistant referee for the first game. Mm-hmm. And then I will reverse the role then. For the second test, I will be his assistant. Then I fly home. And then we have Luke Pearce from England will fly out then to referee Argentina, Georgia. John Lacey will stay on to run Touchamit. And then my AR this year is from a new young referee from South Africa. Mm-hmm. And my TMO is from New Zealand. So that'll be the team of... I better check, actually, who my TMO is. I noticed all the appointments when they came through to us about 8 weeks ago, 10 weeks ago, but then I haven't checked up then. Yeah, but it's a New Zealand referee. A New Zealand referee will be my TMO, I'm pretty sure.
So are the law changes presumably will apply to you as well in Argentina?
They apply from all international games now, Brian, and all the games being played in the Super Rugby, for example. It was a bit, if you go back to the England-Barbados game last weekend, you had the Pro 12 final, the Viva final, and then the European playoff played on Friday and Saturday that weekend, and then the English game on Sunday against the Barbarians was being played by the new laws. And then when Ulster played the Barbarians then on Thursday, they went back to the old laws because it was a club game between Ulster and the Barbarians. But now, from June the 1st on now, all the matches now will be played under the new law. And what's something for people to be aware of as well, the laws that are being applied in the under-20s tournament at the moment will not be in effect in the international. Some of those are trials. They've been trialed in the under-20s. Right. So the under-20s will play the same laws that we are playing in Argentina, England next week, for example, and the Lions will play. But there are other laws in the under-20s being trialed as well as part of the global trial in that tournament. But they will not be in law. So some of the laws you're seeing in the under-20s at the moment, they won't be part of the internationals coming up or the season starting in September, I don't think.
Uh-huh. Nigel, can I wish you have a safe flight, mate. Come back in one piece. And we'll speak to you again soon.
Hey, thanks very much, Brian.
Thank you.
All the best. Take care. See you. Ta-ra. Bye-bye.
Well, very shortly, we'll be speaking to Earl Crabtree about the weekend's Super League action. Some interesting results, as always. But, Craig, before we do that, I referee probably two or three games a year just to... They mess about games, and they're very easy because they're very slow and so on. Have you ever fancied doing that?
Refereeing, no.
No?
I tried to do it as a player. As most tens and nines do, they do a lot of talking and in the referee's ear quite a lot. A bit like yourself, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But it's a tough job, and, I think,
Nigel's saying there, you know, he's so impartial. You know, he is the best referee in the world. I like him and Wayne Barnes, for me, are two excellent referees. And, yeah, you trust him to do a Welsh-Scotland game or England-Wales game, whatever. The only law, the new law that he talked about just now that I'm, as a kicker, I'd be really not happy with is the penalty try one, because the easiest 2 points you're ever going to get.
Oh, because you don't get them. That's right, eh? Fair enough.
So a few kickers are not happy with that one. But I think refereeing is a tough job. And you mentioned Scottish referees. We need to get one or two. We've got one or two good young referees coming through at the moment. Mike Adamson is a good young referee, ex-player who understands the game very well. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing one or two young Scottish referees coming through and getting themselves back in the...
Well, good, because, I mean, it's been a while. Because Scotland used to have a great reputation for having really good referees, you know, Hosey and other people like that. Very, you know, Mel Sanson.
Jim Fleming, Anderson.
Who was the guy with the tash?
Megson.
Megson, Ray.
Rocking Ray.
yes. But they had a crop which were very good and really well... respecting this, you know, seem to have dropped off, which is a shame. Anyhow, it's time now to hear from another member of the team behind the team. Well, as regular listeners know, as we were building up to the British and Irish Lions tour to New Zealand, we were bringing you the full story of those who made the tour possible, the team behind the team, supported by QBE Business Insurance. Now that the tour has actually started, it's even more pertinent, and this week we're going to hear from Dr. Ina Falvey, the head of the Lions medical team, and I began by asking him about his own backroom staff.
We've got a great team. We've got three very experienced physiotherapists, Prav Masima, Phil Pask, and Bob Stewart. Mm-hmm. And between them, they've got nine Lions tours between them. So we're and we have two massage therapists, David Revens and Angela Rickard, and myself.
Are there any other doctors going on the tour?
No, I'm the doctor going.
We spoke previously to several Lions, and I mean, Lawrence Dallaglio had a famous story about being injured in New Zealand and going to A&E and finding there was only a junior on because everyone was watching the game. Now, that eventuality won't happen nowadays, will it?
No, it's actually, there's quite a structured format now to how games are covered and looked after. So World Rugby would have an international standard. So for every game that you attend, and the host nation, so in this case New Zealand, but for example during the Six Nations or any international game like that, so if there's a game on the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff, you have to have a whole coterie of doctors present. So you'll have an emergency physician who can look after, say, for example, an airway issue. You'll have an orthopaedic surgeon. You'll have an ophthalmologist to look after eye injury. You'll have a maxillofacial surgeon who looks after facial fractures. You'll have a radiologist on call to perform any imaging. You'll have a dentist on call. And you have every eventuality covered, and all of those specialists are at the pitch nowadays. Mm-hmm. So they're in the medical room. So when a player is transferred into the medical room, if they require further management, such as in Lawrence's case where he had a fracture, he will be taken to the hospital by the orthopaedic surgeon at that time and looked after.
How much information will you have per player on their medical history?
Yes, that's something we've done an awful lot of work on as well. It's a difficult situation because, you know, even now we don't know. We know who's coming into us this week, but we you know, depending on how the semi-finals of the games coming up go, we'll either have guys next week or not. So we could have up to 14 players just coming in on the Sunday before we travel on the Monday. So what we've done to try and preempt that is that we've gone around and we've, over the last month, met all of the players named in the squad face-to-face. Mm-hmm. And what we do in that scenario is we go to them, we find out, you know, are there any particular medications they take? Are there any particular issues they're dealing with at the moment? And players deal with issues in many ways. For example, an ongoing minor injury, which isn't stopping a player from playing any matches, but it might change how he trains. So, for example, he might have a down day in the week extra compared to the rest of the team so that he can manage his load. This is crucial information for us and the strength and conditioning team to make sure that we don't overload players when they come in to us, because as you'll appreciate, getting a team to play as a team in a very short period of time is extremely difficult. And one of the ways to do that is for them to work together hard, because, you know, it creates an esprit de corps and an ability to get on with each other. But we need to be sure that we're not overloading guys who aren't able to be loaded as much as we'd like them to. So going around and meeting them face to face, finding out things like how they have their, for example, certain guys will have joints strapped for training and playing, finding out exactly how that's done, getting videos of all that, which we have on file for them, so that when they come in here to be strapped for a game, that that's done in exactly the same manner that it was done before. And basically trying to get absolutely as much information on them as we can beforehand. So we've met them all, they know us. And then when they come in, it's much less about trying to catch up and more just trying to update.
I suppose you'll need things like any unusual blood types, because if you have serious injuries and they have to be rushed off, you'd need to make sure that that was available, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's even probably that, and that would be one of the more basic things. But even on a more basic level, what kind of allergies people have?
Yes.
Are there, you know, do they have they had reactions to certain medications before? You know, do they have a needle phobia? Certain players do. These are all pieces of information that can be extremely upsetting and unnerving when something bad happens. Mm-hmm. And by being aware of them, you can offset that quite well. You know.
Yeah. How much equipment will you take?
Lots. Lots. We've been here in Vail for the last 2 days, and we've been basically trying to pack everything up to go. It's a very unusual. Basically, you get all of the equipment you would require to run a team, and you start from scratch. You travel around a country for 6.5 weeks with it, and then you disband it again. So you have almost everything that any of the professional teams playing have, but you've got to have it all completely mobile, portable, and you need to know where everything is. So at the moment now, we have all of our equipment in about 30 Pelly cases, and they're all labelled and inventoried, and we've got everything there. So we've got to bring it all with us. So from the smallest things like, you know, your medications, but all of your rehab material, all of your just down to what the masseurs like to use for their physical therapy. You have to plan, and I think delving into the experience that the guys have, that's a great way for us to make sure that we're not cut out on anything. You know,
Can you explain the extra difficulties that travelling so frequently causes to the treatment of injuries? Apart from, you know, just as physically having to pack things up and unpack things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there are a couple of points to that. The first is generally the matches are on a Saturday and a Tuesday. So what happens is that you play a match on a Saturday and you travel on a Sunday. But normally, in a normal course of events, if you were to have, say, for example, have somebody a soft tissue injury like a calf injury, yes, you may well travel back after the game that night, but then you're at your home base for the rest of the week. Mm-hmm. Whereas we'll travel on the Sunday to the new venue. We'll on that Monday, the following day, will be the main treatment day for that. But that's the day before the next game happening on the Tuesday. So what's very important is that we split our resources well, and that we have people looking after the fallout from a game, but then the other half of the team is getting ready for the next game. And you've got to, you know, there's even some crossover between, there'll be players who will be involved in one game and be involved in the next one as well. Mm-hmm. For those short turnarounds, that's not going to be terribly usual, but it will happen. So it certainly does provide a planning challenge more so than an actual therapeutic challenge, because you know, the treatment is the treatment. You apply the same principles of treatment. You know, you remove the insult, you restore function, and you retrain. So that remains regardless of where you're doing it. But the time constraints around what you're doing do provide significant challenges.
When you're flying long distances, that certainly has, you know, a physiological effect. You were flying after nearly every game, but much for less time.
Yes.
Are you
yes.
in the air long enough for any unfortunate squad? No.
Not really. No. I mean, they're all very brief flights. I mean, it's reasonably geographically spread out. They aren't massive difference. Not such for in the previous tour. You know, we flew from Perth to Brisbane, and we flew from Brisbane down to Melbourne. They're pretty long trips,
yeah.
And certainly would have taken their toll. But these are short hops really,
yeah.
And in some cases the hops are so short that there's even small planes. So it's less of an issue. But again, I think as you'll experience yourself, I think any time you go up into a high pressure into a pressurized cabin, I think it's quite draining and tiring in its own right, and it does have a toll.
Undoubtedly, players are going to get injured, and there will be more than minor injuries for some, unfortunately. At what point do you decide, I'm sorry, your tour is over and we need a replacement?
Yeah, again, it's a moving target because, you know, if somebody can't perform their duties or they're not going to be able to do their job, then it makes it reasonably easy. So, for example, somebody having a fracture or having a major ligament disruption, I mean, that's... You arrive at your diagnosis, you know what's wrong. The player's going to be out of action for somewhere between 8 weeks or 6 months, and that immediately rules that player out. So, unfortunately, that's about delivering the bad news to them in a sensitive manner. But the tricky ones are, for example, you know, a calf strain or, for example, or a hamstring injury or a more minor fracture. So if you look at the last tour, I mean, they'd be well documented. We wouldn't be breaking any confidences. But, you know, Alex Corbacero struggled with his calf, and Jamie Roberts had a hamstring, and Tommy Bowe had a bone fracture, and all of them played significant roles in the final.
Mm-hmm.
And they were people who we rehabilitated. So I think some of that is down to the coach, trusting in his medical team, and some of it is down to sometimes getting lucky, and sometimes it's down to a lot of hard work where you do all the right things and you regain the player's function and they can do their job. So that doesn't always work out, but I think if there is a possibility, these guys are picked because they're the best players, and when they're no longer going to be better than guys who are better than them, and then that makes a decision for you.
What technology do you use for the specific diagnoses? Because I've been, and I know that you're able now to get to the sort of information to coaches that says this player will be 85% fit within X days, and he'll be able to play X minutes, and if you want him to play a full game, it'll be a few days longer and so on. How has that been made possible?
Well, some of it is around diagnostics where you have extremely accurate tests such as a magnetic resonance imaging where we can not only see whether or not muscle is torn, but we can see the degree of inflammation and bleeding around that. And that will then... When a blood vessel breaks and we bleed into soft tissue, it's irritating for the soft tissue, and that's there as a protective mechanism in your body. But how much it bleeds and the amount of swelling you have, that very much dictates how quickly you'll regain function. So that's why we work so hard at using our game ready equipment to get the swelling down. We use early mobilization, we use immersion in the pool, etc., to try and get the swelling down absolutely as quickly as possible and regain function as quickly as we can. So what you're able to do then is, on the back of that, you're able to give the coach a time guideline based on the MRI scan. But then as you go along, it's down to function, really. It's down to what guys can do and having a very good idea of where players are and then where they need to be. So if you don't have a good idea what a guy's capabilities are, trying to plot that in terms of their recovery is very difficult. So the more information, as we mentioned earlier, we have, the easier that gets. And then putting together a good structure, right, what you're doing is you're prognosticating rather than guaranteeing. There's no way of guaranteeing what way the rehab's going to go, but you can give an accurate gauge. So if for example you have the player and he's only running at 65%, there's no way he's going to get back to play the game quickly. Whereas if you have a player and he's running at 85-90%, you can say to the coach, look, listen, if this continues the way it is, in a week's time he will be running at 100%. We'll be able to get him out there, but because he's been out of action now for 3 weeks, you know, he's probably going to fatigue, so you're unlikely to get more than three quarters out of him. So that's how we judge it usually.
And how will that apply to the thorny issue of concussion head injury assessments?
Yeah, I mean, I think thankfully that's the whole assessment and how we manage it, I think, has become a lot clearer in the last couple of years, to be honest. I mean, if we were on the last tour, we didn't have the head injury assessment to use. So we'll be using the head injury assessment now. And I think everybody who I've been involved with is up to speed now, that we just don't take any chances. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, games are games, but guys' brains, they're the only ones that they've got. We've got to look after them. So I think where there is a doubt, the player is removed. So if there is a suspicion of concussion, they're removed from the field of play and they don't go back on.
And just finally, I was in Australia for the last tour. And I was flying back and I couldn't get a flight until the following Monday. So it was 2 days after the final test. And guys were still there saying, well, I'm waiting for my assessment insurance-wise to get handed over. Can you explain that to people?
Well, it varies on from tour to tour how that's structured. But basically, we would all of the players when before players come in to tour with us, we would go through every injury that they've got and every potential injury that may reoccur. So a lot of the time with players, it's not just a fresh injury; it's an injury that may, for example, have been on and off for a while, and then changing your training or changing where you are can make the injury more apparent. So from that perspective, if somebody, for example, has, you know, an ongoing problem with their ankle or knee, we need to know about that so that it doesn't affect their performance on the tour. But by the same token, when they finish the tour, we need to make sure that we're handing them back to the club in the best possible condition. And if they have any issues that have arisen on the tour, we need to get them sorted out for them. So everybody goes through the. It happens. So last year we did it on the Monday and the Tuesday, where we went through. Everybody has to go through a full medical to make sure that there's nothing that needs to be dealt with or sorted out before they go back to their club or country.
Always fascinating to hear the team behind the team. I'm sure that I'm sure that the listeners will appreciate just the sort of job and the sort of pressure that the backroom staff are under. You know, see, for them, I mean, it's always great as a player. There's a lot of pressure on you, but for them, it's almost 24/7.
The detail they go to nowadays is unbelievable. It was much more simple back in the day when you had a physio and a doctor, and that was it. Psychologists, all kinds. You know, but you know, listen. It's obviously looking after the players. They try to make it as easy as possible for them, mm-hmm. and give them everything they've got to win this test series. And mm-hmm. They're good people, and they'll have great memories. But they're going to be great for the team, and hopefully they'll make that difference.
And next week we'll have another team behind the team. And thanks to QBE Business Insurance, who support this podcast, and the team behind the British and Irish Lions. QBE are about building the strongest possible partnerships, one team, and collaboration across multiple countries to give businesses the confidence to achieve their ambitions. Right, finally, time to go to the Great Game of Rugby League, and pleased to speak to one of the best contributors we have, and a person who always comes and helps us out, Earl Crabtree. Good evening, Earl.
Good evening. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah, now then, you saw, well, it was a huge win today for Huddersfield.
Yeah, we actually went into this game and we're playing a little bit better than we have done in previous weeks. I think over the last three games, we weren't brilliant, but we improved. Now, going into this, I think we had a little bit of confidence. Warrington not playing so well. I know it's just improving by little bits and little margins. But I didn't expect the victory that we got. 44 points to 4 was a ridiculous outcome for us.
Eight tries. I mean, I've said this before, but it almost seems to me Danny Brough is there and plays well, and everything, and the world is happy. When he's not, and he's suspended, or he's got the hoof because he's not, you know, he's not captaining or whatever. Then the world is tragic. Is it as simple as that, or is there an element of truth in that?
No, I don't know. I think he gets a lot of hard press, and he's the sort of person that, for me personally, so he's actually one of my better friends, believe it or not, out of rugby league. I mean, we're chalk and cheese, we're totally different people, but what he does for the team, what he does for the club, and also just off the field as well, is nothing but professional. And I love what he actually contributes towards the team, and every time he plays with his heart on his sleeve. He really does. And sometimes he does mouth off a little bit too much. Sometimes he says the wrong thing. Sometimes he makes a couple of mistakes or gives away a bad penalty. But he wants to win. It's that desire to win that it makes him such an influential player. And I think sometimes if you have that desire throughout the rest of the team at times, then I think you'd be very, very tough. And today, we just seem like a different team. Brophy back in, Jordan Turner as well, making his debut after coming back from Canberra Raiders from Australia. Yeah. He was fantastic. Jermaine McGilvery, as always. Jake Mamo looked exceptional. And it looked, for the first time, that it was actually starting to come together.
Are they going to miss Turner's going the other way? Is that wise?
It's hard to say, really. You just never know exactly what's sort of going on. I think, Warrington, for instance, just seemed to be going in a bad direction. And you never know, really, what's gone on. And I know from in the past what's happened with us is when we've been playing bad, people start saying it's something that's happening in the background. It's not always the case. Sometimes it is the players. It's sometimes injuries. And who really knows? But Tony Smith, I think at the moment, is going to be finding it pretty tough. He's under a lot of pressure. And today was the first time I've actually seen a Warrington team like that look so bad. They looked like they weren't up for it. They had no energy. And physically, they weren't in the battle. And that's not the Warrington of the past.
Yeah. Hi, Earl. Craig Chalmers here. How are you?
I'm great, mate. You?
Good, good, good. Looking at Leeds Rhinos against Leeds Centurions. Leeds Rhinos are playing far better this year. They obviously up the top of the table. Leeds Centurions, can they survive? Have they got enough quality or enough depth in their squad to survive?
It's an interesting one, that, because they beat us at the beginning of the season. They started off on fire. I think they won the first three games straight. I actually said some comments on the Super League show which actually offended some of them. I actually got a phone call from Leeds Centurions basically giving me a bit of grief about what I said. Now, they walked out, when I said it, they walked out with a bit of cockiness, arrogance, and they want to basically knock people around a little bit. I see them now as a team that look a little bit more scared. They look like they're not quite as confident anymore, because this is the grind of Super League, week in, week out, against the best teams in the country. It's not that easy. And I meant them as compliments, those words that I was using for them, because you need an element of that in any professional sport. But Leeds, they're lacking confidence. They've got the players. They play some lovely rugby league at times and throw the ball around. But at the moment, I think they're definitely one of the favourites to go down. And I can't see them getting out of that for the time being.
Now, there's been a lot of debate about player welfare. And, I listened to a discussion with Kyle Amore and Richie Mathers and Tony Hannan about just what is or isn't going on, and the magic weekends and the amount of games that players are playing. Where do you stand on all that?
I don't like the double Easter weekends, as we kind of refer them to, where you're playing two games over a matter of about 3 days. I think is disgraceful. I don't think it's great as in for the health of the players, the welfare of the players. But also, as a fan of rugby league, I think it lacks the quality. I think if you start playing games over three games over 10 days, 7, 8, 9 days, whatever it may be, I think you start to lose the quality, because the players are fatigued. I think their ability is hampered by this. And it is obviously about welfare. But also, I think if you're trying to advertise a sport, don't put everybody under ultimate amounts of fatigue to try and then present your sport in the best light. I think it's daft.
Well, I thought that was reflected in the whole Wigan game. In the one sense, you had a lot of tries scored, but you got the feeling that people were trying. But, physically, it felt to me as though it was, just a minutes too far. And in other circumstances, it wouldn't have been like that.
I totally agree with you. And I think another game as well was the Leeds game. I think it was absolutely horrendous. There was a lot of penalties, a lot of errors, and really scrappy. The teams go out there to put in 100%. That's what you do as a player. You naturally have to get yourself up for any sort of game and almost like ignore your fatigue or the fact that you're injured or you've got a couple of little knocks here and there. But when you go into the game, you can't hide from that. It's going to hit you. It's going to get you. If you're dehydrated or anything like that, it will actually affect you. And you can see that in the games and how the teams are playing. And I think you'd see from what Huddersfield did today, having that extra day off, which was controversial, made a massive difference. Energy levels, the fact that they just didn't drop the ball, didn't give many penalties away. It made a massive difference to how we played. And Warrington, I'm not giving them as an excuse because I think they were woeful, but they possibly could have been a little bit better if they hadn't played an extra game.
Yep. Well, Salford, another thrashing against Catan. This year, what surprised me is the number of games that we're seeing that are recording 7, 8, 9, 10 tries, as if one side has almost given up. And that's not the way that rugby league is. I know that that's not happening on purpose, and yet sides are recording these monumental try counts. What's going on?
I think it's definitely a mentality side of it, and I've been under those situations, under that sort of pressure where the opposition basically is just getting a roll on. Yeah. It's very, very hard to stop, and Widnes actually putting Catalan to bed. I think it looks like a team that have given up on themselves, and I think players do give up. They don't believe in themselves, and I've been in those situations where you're just kicking the ball back to them and they're going to score on the next set again, and you have no confidence and you just can't seem to do anything right, and the pass the ball obviously goes to the opposition. But I don't think you give up, but you're all already beat, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And sometimes it's just very, very hard to stop to get out of that rut.
Salford are a club that have always interested me. I mean, I suppose it's Mr. Kukash's influence. You know, you rarely get to hear about owners in rugby league, and yet you do there. Their form this year, I was surprised that they got knocked over by Wakefield.
Yeah, me too. But do you know what? With Wakefield, they've been playing really well, and they're the two teams I sort of compare to each other. In the past, some of the players have gone from either side to each other, and they're what you probably call in rugby league terms loose cannons. People who actually probably like a drink more than most other players and have the ability, the great ability, which makes them borderline geniuses or numbskulls. And a lot of the times they turn into that person that you don't really want at your club. And I don't like to see that as an ex-professional. But what they've got now is professionals. The likes of Scott Griggs, who was the ultimate professional at Huddersfield, gone to Wakefield, and he will put that across, that message across. And they've had good advice. They've got great players that will go over there and work hard and know how to do it to the best of their ability and also at a professional level.
Yeah.
And I think Marwan's actually finally got a good advice about the players that he's signing.
Yeah.
And he's done the exact same thing. And they're getting the rewards for it. They're signing good players that work hard and do the right things. And that's really important.
How good is Caton Brown?
He's very good. He's an exciting player. Very, very fast. Got great ability, knows where the try line is as well. I think he got another hat-trick this week. And he's one of those players that you have to watch out for. He's never been the sort of player where I thought he'd do all the damage himself. But Salford are a great team that keep putting people in good positions, going from Salford. And then Wakefield find themselves in the same sort of similar position where they throw the ball around now. They're not scared to play. They score points. And it was another tight game between the two, scoring quite a lot of points, about 50-odd points in the game. And it's good to see. I think that's the beauty of any sort of sport, when you can score tries and make it entertaining. And I think that's what we do quite well.
Yeah.
Hi, Errol. As a sort of a union man, but like my league, it's good to see some of the traditional teams over the years, St Helens, Leeds, Wigan, those teams aren't at the top. You've got Salford, Castleford, Wakefield, Hull. You know, these teams are really pushing for the title this year, and that's good to see for me.
Yeah, I think in the past, obviously, we've had issues with the fact that there was no salary cap, so you could buy whichever players you really wanted to. And that kind of meant that a lot of teams were going over to Australia, purchasing their best players and bringing them over, and they just won absolutely everything. The salary cap's tightened that up, and also exchange rate, funnily enough, is a lot of, a lot of Aussies can't come over here because they don't get paid quite as much money. It's quite simple. So that means you have to invest in the youth. So more younger players are coming through the ranks, and Sintown's Wigan especially, unbelievable at bringing the players through, as are Leeds. And that kind of tightens it up a little bit because you have to invest the money that you would have spent in your youth setup, bring academy players through, and you're sort of fighting for the best English players, which makes it a bit more exciting. And then also, then obviously, you're gonna, someone else is going to win it.
Yep. Oh, thank you very much. I know you interrupted your dinner to come out and speak to us, so
I know.
very, very pleased about that. Great as always. Speak to you later. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Cheers.
Right, that's the end of the show, Craig. Now, big time for the Lions. Now, this is a big step up in quality. There are no... I have written this, you know... The tour schedule's not been ideal for various reasons. Lots of things could have been better and what have you. But in New Zealand, you can't, as a player, are you sure? I don't believe you should, as if you're connected with a squad, make any sort of excuses, because they will jump on this, the Kiwi Public and Press, and say you're already trying to make excuses for not winning.
They've already started jumping on us.
And you, so just let your plane do the talking now.
No, I think it's a massive game on Wednesday. It really starts now. I mean, obviously it has started, but listen, Blues is going to be a step up, massive step up, and the guys that are preparing for this game have got to be on it, and I think they will be. I'm really positive about the next couple of games. The one against Crusaders, the third game of the tour, is going to be a big match. And that's going to be a real point towards the Test team.
You know, it works both ways. You know, they can have reverses that could do it. But on the other hand, if they were to go unbeaten for the four, that would be a phenomenal... psychological boost, because they know the quality that's there, the quality they're going to face.
I think you've got to put markers down on tours, you know, and I think next couple of games we could put markers down. Mm-hmm. It's like the Crusaders game is going to be a test match. That's going to be a test match. Yep. Test match players on both sides, and I think that if we can win that game, we can really make a statement for the rest of the tour.
Absolutely. You've been listening to Brian Moore's Full Contact in association with The Telegraph and QBE Business Insurance. My thanks to my co-host Craig Chalmers for joining me in the studio this week, and as always to our producer Abby Patterson. Next week I'll be joined by the former Gloucester and England wing James Simpson Daniel. And remember, you can get in contact with us throughout the week via the hashtag FullContact. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and to leave us a review. Best of luck to the Lions. Give it to them, boys.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.